Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 131, recorded September 17th, 2012.
Yes, I'm very excited about this episode because I think I've made a technological breakthrough that will render podcasting much easier.
Yeah, so he's very excited. He was doing a little dance around the room just before we hit record.
Yeah, it's somewhat akin to the secret shrimp dance.
Yes, yes. Okay, plus, exciting, we have a couple new people.
We do,
yeah. On the show today that we've heard from. So, we are going to be hearing from Aram in New York, and Michael R. I don't know where he's from.
I don't know where he's from either.
He's Cyberspace. Mystery Michael. And Mick, and some YouTube comments.
Yes, Mick in Carnforth.
Well, as opposed to all the other Micks that write in every week.
We might have a different Mick,
oh, come on. Mick is on a first name, no location needed
I know.
Basis.
He's a definite dyed-in-the-wool, yes. 100% AquariMax.
Yes, he is. We love him. Okay, so we're going to hear first from Aram in New York.
It might be Aram. We don't know.
Oh, yeah.
So if we pronounce
guessing,
it wrong, let us
I'm
know.
I'm sorry.
If no, it's okay.
If I'm butchering it, no, my apologies to him, yes. Okay, he says, "Hello, AquariMax. I love your podcast. You cover a lot of interesting aquatic topics." Hooray! That's good to hear.
That is.
One of the topics that you covered not that long ago was the Indian almond leaf. Can you please talk a little bit more about this leaf? A few of the things I would like to find out is, does the leaf really work? Why is it so expensive? Can it be collected here in the U.S.? And can I use any other leaves to replicate the magic effect on shrimp and betas?
Okay, well, that is a good topic. I like it. And we can go into a little more depth than maybe we did last time. But the idea is, okay, first of all, does the leaf really work? Well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. There are a lot of betta breeders who swear by it. And there are a lot of shrimp keepers and other, you know, people who keep things that like to have water that's a bit on the acid side with some tannins in it, that swear by it. That doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot, but millions of breeders can't be wrong. I don't know. Maybe they can. But a lot of people use it, and they seem to say that it works. As far as empirical evidence, I know that some studies exist on the properties of the leaf. We do know that it makes water more acidic. I mean, that's beyond doubt, and lowers the pH of water. And imparts tannins to the water and other substances of the water. This is, you know, beyond debate. It happens. And so if you have fish that prefer that sort of water condition...
Makes sense that it would be better for them.
Makes sense that it would be better for them. But in terms of other magical properties that are ascribed to it, you know, these are somewhat up to debate. Because many people tout its antibacterial, antiviral, immunity-boosting properties... And there are some empirical studies in terms of the active chemical properties of the leaf in relation to humans that they're investigating some of these and have investigated some of them. So studies exist demonstrating the evidence that there's some properties the leaf has that could be therapeutic. But many of these I don't think are in terms of aquarium fish and so on. But there is a website that talks more about that, but I'm going to say the short answer is a lot of people think it does work, but I don't consider myself an authority, so I'm not going to say yes it does or no it doesn't beyond what I've already said. But you can check out this website to learn a little bit more about that. It's www.indianalmondleaves.com/chemistry.php. Talks specifically about some of those things that could help. Now it also because the pH is lowered, that does reduce the toxicity of ammonia, because the ammonia turns to ammonium, which is less toxic.
Which is less,
so we know
less
that,
harsh to deal with.
Right, and we know that's beyond debate. One property that people talk about it having is that it hardens the scales of the fish, making them, you know, more resistant to damage. And you know, whether or not that's the case, I can't really say.
How would you test how hard a fish's scales are?
Well, what exactly that means is, you know, that's a question. But
do they mean like it actually makes it physically harder, or it just makes them healthier? Or?
You know, I've read things that talk about that and say that more acidic water does make scales harder and more resistant to damage. But
Interesting.
Have not looked into that exhaustively, so I don't know exactly what to say about it. But my inclination is that it does do some therapeutic things for fish that live in, and other organisms that live in water, that tend to have, these types of organic acids dissolved in them from decaying leaves. It makes sense. It just does. My personal opinion, without being able to back it up empirically. Why are they so expensive? My guess is just that it's demand.
It's basic economic supply and demand.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who live in places where they can collect this plant, the leaves of the plant, which, by the way, I didn't mention, the scientific name is Terminalia catappa, T-E-R-M-I-N-A-L-I-A, and then the species name, C-A-T-A-P-P-A. We used to live where we could collect it all over the place, in Hawaii. They were all over the place, and we could have collected hundreds of them if we had wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I did collect some of them. I never needed that many, but I collected some of them.
They're very pretty trees.
Yeah, they are. And can it be collected in USA? Well, yes, it can be collected in
Hawaii.
Hawaii.
Do they have them in Florida?
I'm not sure if they do. They might. It's a good question. But they cannot be collected in, temperate areas.
Mm-hmm.
They don't grow in temperate areas. Or intemperate areas, as you might say. Like
they don't grow in places where the weather loses its temper.
Right. But we would collect them in Hawaii and things like that. They're all over the place there. And they're widespread in many parts of the world. They've been spread around into into South America, and they live in many other places where they're not originally from. But I guess originally, depending on which source you look at, they were found in parts of Asia and Africa and maybe even Australia naturally. Their seeds are buoyant, and they have sort of a cork-like outer shell.
Mm-hmm.
It's very buoyant and resistant to salt water. And so
they just kind of float from one location to another?
Right, and then they can sprout something like mangrove pods.
Coconuts.
Or coconuts, right. And so
interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know if they were introduced on purpose to Hawaii. I rather suspect they were. But, there you go. Other leaves that can be used? Well, a lot of people use oak leaves. I've used them myself in aquaria.
Any specific kind of oak or just any kind of oak?
I don't think it really matters. The main thing is, with both Indian almond leaves and others, most agree that you can't just pick a green leaf and throw it in. Not generally the best idea. Nor should you pick... and I guess it depends on some of the leaves, but I'm talking specifically about oak and Indian almond right now. Nor should you pick a leaf that is not dry and put it in. No, I already said that. Nor should you pick a leaf.
You shouldn't pick a green leaf.
And then dry it and put it in.
Okay.
Nor should you put a green leaf in of Indian almond or of oak. What you should do is find a leaf.
So don't get a green leaf and dry it, and don't get just a straight green leaf.
Right. You get a leaf
just
that
don't
is
use
naturally
green leaves.
Dry. Right. That has fallen from the tree by itself.
Okay.
And is dry. You can use that.
So harvest them off the ground.
Right. You need to be sensitive to the dangers of pesticides,
of course. I was just going to say, I imagine you'd need to wash it first.
Yes, and I would recommend if you have knowledge that pesticides have been used around
just
a tree.
Just don't use
those.
I would
prefer not to use it. For example, our oak trees, we've never used pesticides on them, so I collect those from the trees that have been there for years.
Would you wash
bothered.
It? I mean, as long as you don't know there's pesticides on it, would you still just rinse it before you put it in the tank, or would you wash it off with baking soda?
I just rinsed it off.
Just rinse it.
When I put them in for the betas, for example, I just rinse them off. Other leaves, I know that Mick uses beech leaves for his shrimp.
Oh.
And that works. And there are lots of other leaves that people have used. You just have to be careful because certain ones are toxic. But I know at least oak leaves grow in a lot of temperate places around the world, and you can use those. I mean, we have scrub oaks that grow natively here.
I have oak trees in New York.
Yeah. In most places of the U.S., they have oak trees of some kind, and you could probably use those. So there's an idea, and you can Google, oak leaves, shrimp, and you'll find all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So hopefully, Aaron, that helps, elucidate on that particular topic just a little bit.
And thank you for writing in. Okay, we're going to go to the next email, which is from Michael, Mystery Michael.
We can call him Michael in cyberspace until further notice.
Yeah, but Mystery Michael has, alliteration.
Terribly mysterious.
Terribly mysterious. Yes. Plus, next week is, not next week, but next month is October, and then it will be Halloween, and things can be mysterious.
Okay.
So, there you go. Okay, Michael says, Robert in Boston referred him to us, so thank you, Robert.
Yes, thank you indeed.
And he has some situation with his angelfish. So he's had his angels for about a year and a half. He raised them from eggs. That's pretty cool.
Cool.
He says the two that he kept are black with one gray tiger stripe down their middle. So they're like his favorite fish. They know him. He wants to keep them. And he says he Googled an awful lot looking for help, but couldn't find a whole lot. In fact, he said he found on one site from this guy that says that they are live breeders and the male will kill the female after she gives birth, and he says he laughed very hard at that.
yeah, that's a really interesting new species of angelfish.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
It's probably related to the Yeti. I've never heard of a live-bearing angelfish. That's really crazy that someone would profess to breed them for 20 years and yet not know that they are egg layers.
They're a little bit confused.
It's a bit bizarre.
Yes. Okay, so he says about a week ago at their morning feeding, he noticed his two angels in the corner and their fins were clamped, their bellies were swollen, just not looking good, and they were covered in a milky coating. He says they wouldn't eat that morning but kept darting for food but returning to the corner without eating. I pulled them out of the tank and into my quarantine tank. This tank is empty, so they kept rubbing themselves on the glass bottom. Then they would sit, fins clamped and pointed slightly up and twitching, sometimes launching forward super fast, and then slowly they swim backwards to their sitting spot, which was usually by the filter intake or right next to the heater. So I Googled around and came up with a bacterial infection in their stomachs, which made sense because I fed them some frozen food the morning before, but only the angels got sick. There are close to 5 other species in that tank that ate the same frozen food, and the fish in my other tanks ate from the same batch of frozen food and are fine. Also, I came up with velvet disease and 90 other diseases, including angelfish AIDS, which broke out in 1986. Wow, how can you have angelfish AIDS? I guess they have feline HIV.
Right. The acronym AIDS just stands for autoimmune deficiency syndrome. And so syndrome refers to a complex of symptoms.
Just a set of symptoms.
Right? Symptom set. And so many species have something that's referred to as species name and then AIDS, mm-hmm. because it means some sort of problem that, and in many cases it is viral, but it may be other cases as well, where basically it depresses the immune system.
But it's not the same.
No, it's not the
strain
same
as what humans get.
It's buggy that gets humans.
Okay.
No.
So he says, this is kind of what he did so far. He changed 35% to 50% of their water once a day. Put in some Mellifix, antibiotics, aloe vera, and a tablespoon of salt per 10 gallons. He turned the temperature up to 82 and held it there for that whole week. He says he's just now starting to bring it back down to their normal 76 and using less and less salt. He says the first day they didn't eat. They just sat there near the heater or intake, covered in slime, twitching, their fins were clamped, bellies swollen, having some, their anus was protruding, darting around every once in a while and rubbing themselves in the glass bottom or tank sides. So sometimes they wouldn't use one of their side fins, they just held it flat against their body while they used the other one too much to keep themselves upright. Second day, the coating was clearing up, but the rest of it was all there, but they did want to eat, and he says they were excited to see him, so he gave them a little bit of flake food. He kind of skips ahead a few days to today. He says the coating is all gone. Pretty much they look pretty normal, except that as soon as they stop swimming, their fins clamp again. They're holding them normally when they're swimming, but then they clamp them when they stop swimming. And their bellies are still swollen, and their poor little bums are still sticking out. He says at first their poo was almost clear, now it's normal. And you were saying what would make it clear?
Well, if there are a lot of the intestines are inflamed and so on, and they're releasing a lot of mucus, that could do that.
Which would make sense if they did have an infection
right
in there. Okay. So he's kind of wondering, you know, have the antibiotics beaten this, except for, you know, the bellies and that intestinal problems and everything still going on? Or are those due because of all the salt in the water and the fact that it's warmer? Will they feel better when he brings them back down to a cooler temperature and the water's not so saline anymore? Or, you know, would that... he's kind of just wondering where should he go from now. He says, I know too much antibiotics for humans can cause upset stomach and blood in number twos, he says. As of today, they're still on the antibiotics, but their bellies were swollen before the antibiotics. So he knows the antibiotics didn't cause the swelling, but he wants to know, you know, is it keeping it from going away? Because it's killed off whatever happy flora is supposed to be in their intestines. He says, if there is still an infection in their bellies, I don't want to take them off the antibiotics. I believe that the antibiotics are what are saving my fish so far. So that's kind of where they're out. I mean, that's kind of where they're at right now. Okay, we're going to take our break really quick, and then when we get back, we will talk about some possibilities here.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629. Or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nelly.
Okay, so give us your thoughts on this particular situation.
Well, thank you, Michael, for your email, and I'm glad that Bob in Boston has steered you our way. Hopefully we can help. I do have to admit up front that this is a puzzling situation for me. I haven't encountered anything exactly like this. But maybe something I say or something a listener may say will be of help. And I do have some questions for you as well. Let's start out by saying one thing. It's a great sign the fish are already acting better, and that they have a healthy appetite. I mean, that's half the battle right there. And I'm sure your regimen of large water changes, the slight increase in temperature, the salt was probably beneficial. I mean, angelfish are one of the fish that are not quite as tolerant of salt as some others, but in this case, it seems that it may have benefited them. And we'll keep our fingers crossed that your fish are seeing the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel, not the one that they go to when they're dying.
Yeah, you know, not that light.
The other tunnel and the other light.
The other tunnel. Not that way either. just that they're getting better.
Yeah. And I was curious about the antibiotics that you administered, which ones you administered. There are lots of bacteria that can infect aquarium fish with varying levels of resistance to various antibiotics. And we can't even say for certain that the antibiotics you gave them affected the healthier fish one way or the other. There's just too many variables in this case, but it may have saved their lives. It may not have done anything. We don't really know. But basically, you have to sample a particular bacterium and then test its sensitivity to a range of antibiotics and find which ones it's sensitive to if you're really going to know it's going to work. But, you know, sometimes you have to do what you have to do to see how it's, you know, I think... You wanted to act quickly, and you did, and I think that was very helpful for your fish. But whether or not the antibiotic was beneficial or not, we'll perhaps never know. I also wanted to ask you if any of the other fish you fed the frozen food to were angelfish. I kind of got the impression they weren't. But I was just curious about that, because these two fish reacted that way, and you mentioned that none of the other fish did. So I was curious if any of the others were angelfish. And I also want to know about the swelling in their bellies a little bit. If the swelling stays the same, or if it gets worse, or if it has gotten better, it's still swollen but not as bad, or if it's gradually decreasing, and, you know, different things like this. If you have any ideas on that. And is it just their belly area? I mean, angelfish have kind of a funny shape, so you can, you know, if it's just that area where they get big when they eat, or if it's more of a general body cavity swelling, or what. Maybe those questions could shed a little bit of light. Also, if you have any water tests that you can share with us, water parameters of, you know, everything.
Of the quarantine tank of the other tank? Or?
Well, both would be ideal. Okay. That might help. Anything about nitrates, nitrites, ammonia, you know, that kind of thing. As far as the antibiotics go, again, they can harm beneficial gut flora, as you alluded to, and this can result in intestinal issues of various kinds, just as it can with humans. And I don't know if this is relevant in your particular case, but it might be worth a thought. That could be something that's going on now, that the worst is over in terms of what they were suffering from before, but they may be suffering from problems in their intestines due to the reduction of or the damage to beneficial gut flora. So if this is the case, once the antibiotics are out of the system, the beneficial gut flora should start to make a comeback gradually. But one thing you might look into is just probiotics for fish. They do exist.
I was going to ask you, are they in liquid form? You just add them to the tank?
I know that, is it Dr. Tim's puts one out? And I believe it's a liquid you just add to the tank. I know that there are food additives with probiotics in them and a couple of different brands of food.
Interesting.
So that might be something worth looking into. I haven't used any of the foods with particular, the probiotic foods. Well, I can't say I haven't, but I can't recall specifically what I've used and what I haven't. So anyway, it might be worth looking into probiotics and fish food. The symptoms, including the irritation in the vent area, seem consistent with bacterial issue, but who knows? I mean, it could be something else. The fact that apparently there are only two fish suffering in the same system, and with all your other fish that got the same food, kind of unusual for something bacteria, but can't really rule it out either. Just puzzling.
Are angelfish, I mean, are they most sensitive to bacterial infections than other fish? I mean, if there was something in the food, or just otherwise, if there's the food was just a little bit on the bad side, or if there was some other bug floating around in the water, are angelfish more susceptible to that than some other species?
Well, I would say that they are than some other species, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
In general, are they more susceptible to infections?
Well, I'm not sure.
Is that just too broad?
It might be. It might be too broad. I know that discus are really pretty sensitive about that sort of thing. And angelfish are, you know, they're related to discus. I'm not sure what to say with that, really.
Terry.
I
mean,
I wish I could give you a better answer.
No,
it's not a weird question at all. It's just I'm just not sure where to go with that. Another thing to think about, too, is some antibiotics can damage the bacteria you need for your cycle.
In your tank,
yeah.
Oh.
Some of them will do that. So based on what your quarantine tank setup is like, I mean, you may just be relying on water changes. You are doing large water changes, and that can sometimes be enough. But I'm sure that if you are running a cycle there, that the bacteria could be damaged by whatever antibiotic you're using, and then your quarantine tank might be going through a cycle right now, which would be stressing the fish out, of course, and maybe causing some of their symptoms even. Some of those symptoms that are consistent with the sort of thing you get from cycling stress. Mm-hmm. So it could be that that's what's going on. So that's one reason why it would be nice to get a test.
If you did those tests again, like you were saying.
If you see any measurable ammonia or nitrate in the tank, I mean, that's maybe won't account for the swollen bellies. And that may just be a relic of what has happened, and they may just... It may take some time for that to heal, but in terms of the stress they're exhibiting, that could be related. So we'll continue to ponder the case, and I put this out to listeners who have experience with angelfish or other fish with a similar symptom set. Maybe we can find something else out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we had a couple comments on the YouTube's videos, the baby beta.
Yes,
videos.
The baby betas. I released a video, short clip of them at 7 days and... or 7 weeks and 3 days or 4 days, something like that, just from sometime last week. And some people had some comments, so what did they have to say?
Blue Disc 0123 wants to know if we had any problems with swim bladders in the fry.
Okay. Well, I did mention, I think, on the last podcast that we had some that did have that problem. We seem to have fewer now. And I'm sure
some of them seem to actually improve.
Yeah, at least
better.
One of them. Yeah. A very recognizable individual had some swim bladder problems and seemed to have recovered entirely. I imagine some of them have probably succumbed and disappeared. Just they were eaten by the other fish or whatever. because we did have more, and now there's only one or two that have the problem. Before, I think we had five or more.
There were a few, yeah.
A number of them, and we seem to have fewer, and I'm sure some of them have died, and others perhaps have recovered. And I think I contribute that at least partially to the decapsulation of the brine shrimp.
Yeah, you were saying we should have just done that from the beginning. Speaking of brine shrimp, there's another one, just a comment, just aquatic nerd 777. Wow, nice and fat on brine shrimp. One of the best things is when a fry has a yellow belly.
Yeah.
It's true.
Like we were talking about a few episodes ago, you want to keep fry nice and rotund as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to make them explode, but you want to keep them rotund, and that's what we're trying to do. And it seems to be working, both with the brine shrimp, and they're getting a feeding of Walter worms that have an enriched diet, including spirulina and protein powder, and that seems to be working well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, on to Mick. Hello, Mick. Okay, he has a note here. He says, just wanted to add a word of caution to my notes on my Corydoras treatment in my last message, which I mentioned doing the medication along 80% water changes. I do this using conditioned, preheated water in my fish room, and I strongly advise against changing such a large volume of water direct from the main supply.
Yes, and I'm glad he brought that up, because having talked to Mick, I guess we didn't talk directly to him about his fish room, but we did sort of a virtual interview mm-hmm. about his fish room, and he mentioned that he had, you know, the conditioned water that he used, that he stored in there, and mm-hmm. he collected rainwater, conditioned it, and so on. I was thinking of it from that standpoint. From that standpoint, an 80% water change, you know, can be a good thing, and works for what he was doing. But you wouldn't want a newbie to say, oh, 80% water changes are great. Okay, I'm going to just do one right now.
Dump straight it all out in the from tap the sink.
And get all kinds of problems, including, but not limited to, pH shock, gas bubble disease,
mm-hmm.
you know, other problems with just maybe a temperature issue, all kinds of problems could result. So thank you for bringing that up. I failed to discuss that in the last podcast. So
we were just going from the assumption that he was already doing that. So, okay, he has bad shrimp news.
Uh-oh.
He says, the blue pearl shrimp I picked up last week started dying off. Was losing one every day or two until only two were left from the original batch of eight. Thinking back, I moved some blue apple snails from that tank, which had become clamped up in their shells. They immediately improved on moving them into a new tank, and although I did a... I think he means 100%. He wrote 1,000%. I think he means 100% water change, and put in a new filter for my maturation tank. I suspect that there was something amiss in the sand substrate, which I left in. That's too bad.
Yeah, that is too bad.
Good shrimp news. I went back to the shop and was lucky enough to get the last eight remaining shrimp after work today. The ritual of the happy shrimp dance was held in private. I want to see the happy shrimp dance. He says, I have completely stripped the offending tank down, cleared all the sand substrate, and refilled it using water from two of my other shrimp tanks, added a new filter again, gone for a bare bottom... In the tank, not personally, he says. Yes, no bare bottom happy shrimp dance. Although I guess if you're doing it in private, you could do that if you really wanted to. And he put in some Nitella in a moss ball. Fingers crossed this time.
Yeah, let's hope that it all goes well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is that about where we are in terms of contributors today?
That's all contributors. Thank you, everybody, okay. for writing in.
Yeah. Do we have anything to update on our little bettas?
We need to jar more of them.
We do need to jar more of them.
They're turning into angry young men.
We've seen them flaring at each
other. Street violence, gangs.
Yeah, not just pecking at each other, but flaring. And this was kind of fun.
We're going to have to send them to a rehabilitation camp.
Yeah, they're not really ripping at each other's fins or anything. Haven't seen that. But I saw a male flaring at another one, and he did the little thing where he crossed his ventral fins, which a lot of males do when they flare. Not all of them do, but some of them do.
You could name him precocious.
Yeah, it was just cool to see him doing that. He was flaring, so his branchiostangled membranes, his beard, he was flaring that, and he was also extending his fins, and his ventral fins kind of did that little scissor move, and it was just cool to see. And the coloration, we'll put the video
that's
up.
It's getting stronger.
Yeah, the coloration is getting a lot stronger. A lot of them look like their mom. Mm-hmm. And some of them look like their dad, actually. Because he's kind of a butterfly, and they're more Cambodia, as we've mentioned. And we're getting some of both of those. And the crown tail trait from their mother is showing up on a lot of them. Their rays are starting to extend past the rest of their fins.
Cool.
So it's nice to see. And our son is beginning to take note of these traits that are showing up for his
science project. That's what he's doing for
project.
His. He wanted to do the genetics.
Right. So it's been fun to see, and we'll put some video up. I was thinking, how can I get a good, clear video of him? Because it's hard to do. And so
they're moving back and forth, and so the camera wants to refocus.
Right. So for every maybe 2 or 3 minutes I shoot, I get 20 seconds of decent video. Mm-hmm. So this time I took the little pipette that I'm giving them their brine shrimp with, held it up at the exact focal point where the camera was focusing, and squirted out shrimp slowly. And they would come up and eat it right in front of there. And because they were right there, they were also in focus. So that helped.
And the food was still coming out from there, so they didn't move around trying to chase it.
So they stayed there, and I got a few decent shots. So
it was a good idea.
We'll put that up, and hopefully you'll enjoy seeing that. And hopefully you'll send us all sorts of comments, questions, and things like that that you can share with us. And until next time,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.